With all the GLP-1 companies out there, how does someone know which one's actually reliable?
I tell people to look at four things. Is it safe? Does it work? Is it affordable? And will you actually get clinical support? When you use that filter, one brand keeps standing out, Bleve. They use U.S. pharmacies. People see results close to the research, about 18% weight loss. It's around $4 a day, and they include nurse support at no extra cost. And full disclosure, I actually use them. I signed up during my lunch break and got approved before I even left work.
Okay, I just Googled it while you were talking, and yeah, it really does look simple. For anyone listening who wants to check it out, where should they go?
It's joinbleve.com, spelled B-L-I-V.
So if you've been curious about GLP-1s, joinbleve.com might be a good place to start.
Hey, hey, and welcome into the House of L podcast. I'm Lawrence Holmes. This is my podcast. We are brought to you by Remy Martin. That's the logo on my cap, if you didn't know. And the person that I'm talking to is Tina Nguyen of Fox 32. And what's up, kid? How you doing?
I feel like I'm beaming right now because I'm so excited to join your show. But yeah, super, super excited. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we've been trying to figure out how to make this happen for a while. You guys are so sweet. Whenever I come over to Fox, I figure that we could hang out a little bit on the podcast, especially considering that you had been out in Arizona watching the teams. And I'll get to that in a minute. I want to ask you because I want people, because, you know, you and I have like hung out. We hung out at NBA Summer League. I want people to get to know you, that maybe they see you for a couple seconds on Fox or whatever. But how'd you get here?
I ask myself that every single day. How did I get here? Especially when I get to work around really incredible people like you guys here in Chicago. I graduated from Texas A&M. I'm from Texas, a Southern girl at heart. Graduated from A&M. My first job out of college was with the NBA. So I was working in the league office in Secaucus, New Jersey. And for those who know, you know.
I know.
In Secaucus, New Jersey for a year there. I was with the league when the Raptors won the NBA title. And I was in Toronto when Kawhi Leonard had that crazy four bounce shot over Joel Embiid, and everyone was just like going nuts. And it was the most emotion we'd ever seen from Kawhi ever. So that was when I was with the NBA for a year. I was on their social and digital team. So I was traveling around the U.S. and all that jazz, and then decided I really wanted to start my TV career. Throughout my time at A&M, I worked in the athletic department, went to them when I was a freshman and said, can you please give me a job? I really want to work in TV. And at the time, I had always heard everyone said, it's all about who you know and you have to start working. They looked at me, they were like, you're a freshman, like, what are you doing? And my parents are immigrants. They're from Vietnam. My dad, like my mom, like truthfully escaped for a better life, the whole American dream. So growing up, my parents always worked. And I had always heard stories of hearing them, you know, when they were younger, they were selling ice cream back home in Vietnam. So my dad growing up was like, you're going to work. My parents own a business. So I was doing paperwork for them when I was 11 years old. And all the kids were outside. And I'm like, what are we doing here? But honestly, super grateful for that, because here I'm in college, a freshman, and they're looking at me like, you want a job with us in the athletic department? I was like, yeah. So thankfully they hired me, and I spent all 4 years at A&M working at 12 Man Productions, did some social and digital work that led to the NBA. But I left A&M with the full on demo reel, Lawrence. Like, I had a whole like in studio. I interned in San Antonio one summer, had a whole demo reel. So I knew ultimately this was what I wanted to do. So I lived in Hoboken, New Jersey. So I moved out of there, went to Tyler, Texas, which for those who don't know, it is where Patrick Mahomes is from. Was there for 2 years covering high school football, the whole shebang. So funny, when I see Brett Bielema and I talk to him, he obviously was at Arkansas, knows a few of the coaches, the high school coaches that I know. So we always bond over high school football in that area. Was in Tyler for 2 years. Then I went to Vegas, was there for 2.5 years. Was there when the Aces won back-to-back, the Raiders, still a bit of a hot mess, but covered Gruden for a bit. Covered, oh my goodness, Josh McDaniels, Rich Bisaccia, the interim, Antonio Pierce. Was there when the Golden Knights won the Stanley Cup too. Was on the bus with the guys during this whole Stanley Cup parade and celebration. And by the way, I can only imagine what it was like here in Chicago. Vegas was kind of where I fell in love with hockey too. And I was just watching the Team USA and Team Canada today too, and the Blackhawks, because we were in the locker room there. I got to talk to Connor Bedard one-on-one. So just, I found my love for hockey in Vegas, got to dip my toes into some betting too. So was there for two and a half years, I believe, and then moved to Chicago in January 2024, and have been just kind of kicking it here in Chicago ever since then.
It was weird to meet you because I had seen you like in Vegas.
Oh, that's right.
Like,
yes.
I had seen you on TV in Vegas and I was like, wait, I know you. Like, and I didn't know you, but there was one of those times where I was staying at Circa. And I remember seeing you on air and I was like, oh, wow. Like, I know her. She's really good. So when
I remember you. Yes, I remember this interaction because it was before we did our Sunday night taping. And I think we like connected the dots. Like, yeah, I was in Vegas for 2 years. That's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. It's so look, I'll just step away from the camera for a second to show you something because you brought it up.
Okay.
But take it off the wall. This is the White Sox parade when they won in 2005. And a listener to the score gave me this because I'm on one of those buses.
Oh, that's so cool.
So it's like one of my favorite things that I have was like what that day was amazing. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I remember the bus that they assigned me to. It had Chandler Stevenson, Aiden Hill, Nick Hay, and I just remember thinking to myself, all right, like, I'm on the buses with the dads, like, come on, what could go wrong? Like, they're chill. Nick Hay comes on with the Stanley Cup over his head, and I'm asking him, like, Nick, how you feeling? And he knew, the guys knew, okay, if she comes at you with a microphone, obviously, like, keep it tamed a bit. But it was such an incredible experience. So again, whenever I go to the Blackhawks facility and I see some of the photos from the parades and the time that were on that crazy run, I mean, I can only imagine just in general winning in Chicago, the incredible parades that you guys have. Oh my goodness.
So what's it like to cover winning in Las Vegas? It's such an interesting city from like a fan base standpoint, because there's tons of transplants. Like, the people who are from there are very proud of being from there. But what was it like to see the Golden Knights win, and what was that fan base like?
Yeah, so I would say, well, first off, it's a rarity to meet someone who is born and raised in Las Vegas and who like decided to stay in Vegas too. So that was always kind of a trip when you meet someone that's from Vegas and you ask them, what high school do you go to, type of deal. It was really unique because before the Golden Knights came there, I mean, truly the Running Rebels, Tark back in the day, like that was like what they knew. Okay, this is winning. And that was really kind of, you know, what they knew was sports too. So when you have so many pro teams coming in, and when I was there, I mean, like everybody, though, it was like the very early stages of the A's trying to like get a crack at being in Vegas. I was there for the very first F1 event that was held. Obviously it was like the Golden Knights, the Aces, and then the Raiders too. The Aces and the Golden Knights, the Aces winning back to back, and then Golden Knights, you know, they made it to the Stanley Cup final. And that the city in general has a really unique just connection to the Golden Knights. One, because they're Vegas born, but two, of course, the 1 October tragedy. Those guys, after the terrible shooting happened, those guys were like in the hospital. They were at the blood drives, like really helping that city heal. So, I mean, I believe it was 6 years later, they won the cup, and you had some of the original misfits. We're still on that team. Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, Stevenson, like it was incredible. But I will say, Vegas is not necessarily the difference with Vegas and Chicago. Is Vegas just kind of happy to have like pro teams here? Cause like, obviously the strip, there's so much going on. Like here in Chicago, there's just so much history when it comes to these teams. And I've talked to you about this before, where I feel the pressure of like, I got to know the history of X, Y, Z and all this stuff. And one of the best pieces of advice you've given me is you're here now. Like, now you get to start to embrace it. And, you know, I learn a lot through talking to you, talking to people who have been here for a long time. I love picking, like, Luke Kanellis. When I worked with him, I'd pick his brain about what it was like doing X, Y, and Z. So that's obviously the big difference with Vegas and Chicago. Vegas, it's like, they're so new to having professional teams. It's like when the Golden Knights won and when the Aces went back to back, I was like, this is not normal, by the way, for you guys to experience winning this early on, too, because it is tough to win. It's tough to win a Stanley Cup. And it's tough to, I mean, you guys have Becky Hammon as your head coach. Like, And obviously, Mark Davis, he's heavily invested in the NBA and the facility, too, that he's built for the Aces. But again, I will say that I think they're a bit spoiled sometimes when it comes to the winning, especially when the Golden Knights won the cup. So it's like now they kind of expect it. But then you come to a Chicago where these teams, they all have won at some point. And of course, in a city of Chicago, there's rich history that comes with all of these teams.
What's Texas football like?
Oh, my gosh. Texas football. I would tell people I'm from Nederland, Texas. No one knows where that is. Okay, I'm from Beaumont, Texas. Hit or miss if they know where that is. If you're a coach that I talk to and you have recruited, you definitely know where my hometown is. And when they don't know, I say it's an hour and a half east of Houston. I grew up in a small town, and I always tell people on Friday nights, if you don't know where people are, you look up in the sky and you see the lights that are shining bright at the stadium. That's where you go and that's where everyone is. I grew up, I was a twirler. I was a band nerd. I was head drum major, head twirler. So I had to go to every single high school football game. And it was so fun. And my parents do not know what I do. My parents are not sports fans. My dad is like, I see you on the TV, or I tell my friends you work for the NBA, and they're all shocked. I'm like, it's okay, Dad, don't worry about it. I grew up so when I got to be a part of the whole high school football experience, it was just so comforting and mesmerizing to be a part of, to see everyone rally for whether it's one team, this player, and all the great storylines that came with it. So all that to say, long answer is Texas high school football is absolutely nuts and insane. I obviously came from a small town. We were 4A when I was in school, and we made it to the second round of playoffs. But then you go to a Houston, an Austin, a Dallas, a Fort Worth, those stadiums, they pay millions for players to have the best kind of facility and all that stuff. I mean, that's why you see when you watch, especially SEC football, right? When it comes to some of those five-star recruits, and a lot of them will come from Texas, California, and Florida. Those are your really states that have really great high school talent. So it was such an incredible experience. And I think for someone that has parents who are immigrants who are not sports fans, my brothers are, so it's cool, so I can bond with them over that. And my sister, she is a senior at A&M, obviously went to every single football game this year, loved it. It's cool to be able to bond with them, but it's so funny because our parents are just like my brother. I remember my brother just graduated from UT in 2024, and it was my parents' first time inside a football stadium. And of course, wow, the football stadium's at TU. I call it TU, so I went to A&M. And my mom, I will never forget this, Lawrence. My parents, again, mind you, they're immigrants, came here late 1970s, didn't know English, nothing but the clothes in their back. My mom and dad's face, once they walked into that stadium and just saw everything that came with it, they were so mesmerized. And I got choked up a bit because I'm like, I'm so used to this. But to see my parents' face just light up and be like, wow, this is incredible. It was so cool. So now I'm getting a little teary-eyed, but Texas football is a big deal.
Well, great. I'm going to continue down that road of teary-eyed. What do you think is the most valuable thing that you take away from your parents' immigrant story?
Oh, my parents are so tough. And I really did not understand understand the magnitude and the impact of their story. Honestly, until I, in college is when I really started to understand. And I'm going to be really honest here. For a long time, I struggled with being Asian American. Like, I grew up in a small town in Texas. I wanted to like look like blonde, blue eyed, because like in America, that is what you are being told is beautiful. So I really struggled with being Asian American. And I remember talking to my dad about it. And also, hello, my parents are immigrants and my parents speak broken English. My parents came here with nothing but the clothes on the back, their back. So we didn't fit in like the normal American family. And I would remember like going home from school, just like being upset, like, Dad, like, I don't fit in. I have this like random freckle here on my chin. And I would be like, Dad, I don't like this. My dad's like, Cindy Crawford has it too. And she's beautiful. And I'm like, you're right. She is beautiful. But it wasn't until I got older and really in college when I started to really appreciate my background and my parents being from Vietnam. Oh my goodness, the stories. Now when I go home, I try to like sit down and talk to them. I record their conversations.
Yes.
About their stories from Vietnam, because I know one day I'm really going to miss this and I'm not going to be able to hear these stories. But just, I mean, the tenacity and my goodness, my parents are so kind, the kindest people in the world. Like, they have not been treated the best at times, and I've witnessed it, and it always gets me so teary-eyed. That's why I'm someone who's such an advocate for people and an advocate for kindness, because I've seen how my parents were treated at one point. And so I appreciate so much of their story. Again, I can only imagine what it's like to come to a completely different country, but America. My dad told me, as I asked him, I said, why you? Because you have brothers and sisters. Like, he came from a big family. And my dad, I believe, is the oldest son. And he said, you know, they picked him because they knew he had the higher chance to survive. Wow. So he came here to America. He wasn't 18 just yet. They put him in school in Phoenix, Arizona. And when he turned 18, he told me he went to his counselor and he said, I need to drop out of school. And his counselor's like, why would you do that? Here in America, you stay in school, you learn English, you go to college, get a degree, right? And then you know, you get a job. And he's like, I have to make money to send it back to my family back in Vietnam. So he ended up helping his sister and brother come over. We have my uncles in Denmark. So he sent money over for them to come here to America. Oh my goodness. So they're just tough cookies. And my dad was a refugee in Indonesia for 2 years, then came here. My mom, from what I understand, her story is just like fresh off the boat, Lawrence, like was stuck at sea for a while, finally made to America. She told me how her and my dad met was at a Houston supermarket. My mom said they put her at the cash register. She didn't know how to speak English. So they ultimately just had her go outside and push the carts. And back home in Vietnam, her mom sold shrimp. So she came from a seafood background. And that's all she knew was to like, she's a hustler. My mom works so hard. And now my parents own a business. And I, from the stories I hear from the people that work with them, they always tell me like, my mom, like she may not speak the best English, but once you kind of get used to Lucky and how she works, she's a workhorse, then you understand her more. But I just, growing up, my dad always told me how lucky we are to be in America. Like, I have three younger siblings and we would hear the stories and we're kind of like, okay, yeah, Dad, whatever. Like, hello, we look different. We don't fit in. But the older I've gotten, I realized like, oh my goodness, America, you can come here with a dream. And if you work really, really freaking hard, your dream can come true. And so for me, wanting to become a sportscaster, all I knew was if I just work really hard and I am really kind to people, that like hopefully good things will happen. So sorry, it's a really long.
Oh, it's long great. Answer. It's good. I promise we'll get to the baseball part of it.
Yeah.
But there's one more thing I want to ask you just like on background. What was it like for you when you got to Chicago? Like, what were the things where you were like, man, this is a lot. Like, this is different than Las Vegas.
Yeah. Well, I remember a few weeks out, I tried to find every single documentary on every single team, and I watched all of it, and I just had a moment where I realized, okay, it is impossible for me to, like, know all of this off the top of my head. Like, it's just truly not possible. And I would stress out like a little stress ball so much at it. And then I just got to a point where I realized, you know what? I have to give myself grace and I just have to be present. I have to be present. I have to ask questions. One of the best pieces of advice I got from someone back in Vegas, Paul Gutierrez, used to work for ESPN, longtime writer. His wife is actually Amy Gutierrez, who works for the Giants. And he told me, kid, wherever you go, make sure you know the history. And one of the ways you can find out the history is you pick the people's brains that have been there for a long time. So like a Casey Johnson, a you, a Speaks, like I just love, I know I sometimes text you randomly like, hey, like, you know, what's the story behind X, Y, and Z? But that's one of the things he told me was you need to make sure you know the history. And you need to really pick the brains of people who are from there. They can share you those stories that, of course, you won't find on a Google, you know, with a Google search or a YouTube search. So, yeah, Chicago, it's a lot. And of course, I think the fan base too, being so intense and so smart as well, is like more motivating at you wanting to do your job well, because you want to deliver them the best storylines, the best tidbits as possible. And of course, one of the best things is they're so passionate here, which makes it even cooler. And obviously for me, now that I've hit my over 2 year mark here in Chicago, it's been like really cool to interact with some people. It's so weird to me when I go out, and obviously with the Bears season two and us being home with the Bears, people come out to me and they're like, oh my gosh, like we watch you. And it's very sweet and very kind. But again, they know there's stuff here, which is more motivating to, even when I'm covering hockey or talking to this player, like I want to get the best info because I want to tell them about it.
All right. How long were you in Arizona? A week?
I was there Super Bowl Sunday till Friday the 13th. Ooh. We flew out, yeah, Friday morning. So we did Sox Monday and Tuesday. Tuesday was our crazy day because we got the chance to talk to Chris Getz, Will Venable one-on-one. We watched some of the guys walked around, watched some of the guys too. Munetaka Murakami. That was really interesting to see and just kind of really get like a up close and personal look. He was working with, I believe, Phil Nevin when I was watching him. He was taking some ground balls there in the infield with him by first base. And it was so fascinating to see how, because he had his translator with him, how that really worked up close and personal. Because obviously, like when we're at the, you know, we're inside the clubhouse, you know, you're getting ready to talk to like Shota. Okay, well, Edwin, his translator's right there. But when you were like observing them, like refining their skills, but then when there's a language barrier involved too, and obviously for someone who understands how difficult it is to learn English, especially from Asia countries, that was really fascinating to me. So we were at Sox for 2 days, and we were at Cubs for Wednesday and Thursday. So we jam-packed it all in, but it was so much fun. I felt like I had something every single hour, and I was just taking info, like tidbits, and just from every angle.
What was the most interesting thing that you learned sitting down with Chris Getz?
Ooh, I was really curious with Chris Getz about Mune, because the fact that they even got him in the offseason, and I even asked him, I said, what were those conversations like with Jerry? And my gauge when I spoke with him, it sounds like obviously at one point he did believe, okay, we really have a chance here. But I think it shocked him too a bit, knowing that, okay, this is like one of the best hitters to come out of Japan. Like he's going to come with power and all that stuff. I also got the chance to talk with Ryan Fuller. And one of the reasons why I wanted to talk with Fuller was because I remember Colson Montgomery had talked about him, like kind of name dropped him a bit. And anytime a player name drops someone, that right there, especially for us who have been doing this for a while, you're like, all right, who is this guy? With Chris Getz, it was more so I was intrigued by how he got Munetaka Murakami and just what Jerry thought of it as well. And obviously Jerry was on board and supportive of it too. But the really interesting thing was for me was talking with Ryan Fuller. For one, I asked him when it comes to these guys who are coming from the NPB to the MLB, like, what are their biggest adjustments? Well, in Japan, you're seeing a lot of splitters, like night in and night out. But you come to the US and you come to the MLB, you're seeing like five different pitches and the velocity. It's like 95 plus here. So it's, you know, he comes with power. He can make contact despite, and I know there's a high strikeout rate with him too. But he was telling me they do something, they call it exposure therapy, where for one thing here in the US, the technology is so advanced, obviously. So he's using different bats, using all these sorts of different things, but they have machines that can say like Yoshinobu Yamamoto, okay, he's on the mound, that they can kind of give him a true feel of what it's like during an MLB game. So whenever he is in real time facing these pitchers, he can make those kinds of adjustments. Obviously, it's gonna take some time here, but I thought that was just really fascinating. Obviously, Mune is going to be like the big talking point throughout the whole season and, of course, spring training and everything too. So those are some of my, those were some really interesting things I learned. And then getting to observe him with Nevin and his translator, he knows more English than I really sense him. He picks up quick on stuff. So not saying that he fully knows English, but obviously there's words. And of course, when you are around guys like Americans, English speaking players, you're going to pick it up a lot quicker. So he's smart. The fact that he's, you know, coming here, like that's tough to do. But I think he knows a lot more. And again, I think I'm so excited to see what the season's going to look like for him, because again, like back home in Japan, even talking to some of the Japanese media members, they're like, he's a big deal. Like when he steps up to the box, like everyone, he's going to command everyone's attention. And it was also fascinating just seeing when he was taking live BP, just the players around him too. They were also like locked in, mesmerized, like, what is this guy made of? So I'm just really excited at some point to see all that come together, especially having observed it here so early on at spring training.
With all the GLP-1 companies out there, how does someone know which one's actually reliable?
I tell people to look at four things. Is it safe? Does it work? Is it affordable? And will you actually get clinical support? When you use that filter, one brand keeps standing out, Bleve. They use U.S. pharmacies. People see results close to the research, about 18% weight loss. It's around $4 a day, and they include nurse support at no extra cost. And full disclosure, I actually use them. I signed up during my lunch break and got approved before I even left work.
Okay, I just Googled it while you were talking. And yeah, it really does look simple. For anyone listening who wants to check it out, where should they go?
It's joinbleve.com, spelled B-L-I-V.
So if you've been curious about GLP-1s, joinbleve.com might be a good place to start.
This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
At Cubs camp, the expectations are obviously different. Like the White Sox are in a rebuild. The Cubs were in the playoffs last year. So how did you experience Cubs camp and what was interesting there?
It was so interesting because you have obviously two teams in the city of Chicago, a lot of baseball fans here, and it's like both organizations on, in a sense, different paths, like positive paths forward, especially for the White Sox, right? With Will Venable in year two, yeah, they lost 102 games, but from that end, there's true belief that, okay, we're not going to lose 100 games. Like, yeah, we've lost 324 the last three seasons, but we're really so focused on, like, I also got to talk with Will one-on-one, and honestly, just so impressive. Like, a year ago, he'd never been in this position. Like, he was just getting to know the players, the guys on his coaching staff and stuff. So I think for him, one thing I observed was just more confidence and comfortability as well, and him finding his voice more as a manager. So you like have this one team that found their identity last year, right? Mm-hmm. This is like the bar is to not lose 100 games. And then you have this team here who Craig Council was like, it's hard to have made it as far as we did last year, Tina. And it is hard to play on a team like this. Like, it is hard to also have a group like this where you are this well-rounded. And it was almost like when you're talking to a coach, and obviously when you're talking, you like almost went, it's like, you know, that's like, there's pressure here. And all like for like Council, like he embraces it. Cause one thing I really appreciated, and I asked him just obviously when you step in the clubhouse and talk to some of those guys, the loss in the NLDS, especially to the Brewers though, it definitely still stings with them and it sits with them. And they are, by the way, they're not afraid to shy away from it. Like they will tell you, like, that was not a good feeling. And I was in Milwaukee with that team. They truly believed they had a chance at really winning that game, right? I think the biggest worry for them was, I think we got a chance at getting past Milwaukee. It's just after that, like, when it comes to pitching and pitching depth wise, like that's going to be the biggest hurdle for us. So the fact that they lost their in game five and got bounced, it being in the clubhouse, it was super emotional. Obviously you can imagine like dead quiet, but really abrupt. So when you're talking to these guys like Carson Kelly, Cade Horton too, which on another great storyline going into this season. And if you ask him what he's worked on this in the off season and how he views going into year two here, he'll be quick to tell you how I still got a lot to prove. And I still have a lot of things I want to build on and get better at and all that jazz too. And by the way, I know that these teams now, they've got a scouting report on me. But so it's like, you have one team that really the goal is like what at NLCS or bust, and they are serious about competing for a World Series title. Jed Hoyer, I was talking to him one-on-one, and he, again, going out, he knew that pitching and depth was going to be something they needed to be, that needed to be addressed, going out and getting Edward Cabrera there, you know. And one thing I learned talking to him was the pitching staff, they've been enamored by Cabrera for a really long time now. Like they've, I think it was either Craig or Jed, but I think it was Jed. Jed called him like, he's like a darling to us. Like they've always had their eye. They've been in conversations with the Marlins too in past seasons about Cabrera. So I believe Cabrera is like 27 years old. So a ton of upside. And from talking with Craig, Craig's like, I really think we can get like more out of him. So I thought that was really interesting. And then it's just this team, yeah, they were disappointed in that exit, but you can sense they're really focused on turning that disappointment into true motivation for this season. And then obviously like got a chance to like hear from PCA too, what he's been working on. Alex Bregman, obviously another huge storyline coming, them getting him in the off season, but just seeing him first day there with the Cubs, you know, he's someone, a true student of the game, and hearing PCA have mentioned the conversations that they've had together and how he's already made a quick impact on PCA. So Matthew Boyd, I got the chance to talk to him one-on-one and just kind of get a gauge in what he wants to build off of after, you know, the All-Star year and everything.
About the nicest guy in the world, by the way.
Very nice. Yes. Very sweet and kind. He said with Alex, I mean, having a guy like that in the clubhouse, like obviously the leadership is so key, but he's someone where he's such a disciplined hitter. Like as a pitcher, you cannot make any mistakes with that guy. So the fact that he's on our team, he's like, we're really happy about it. So yeah, those are some few things that I learned. And it was so interesting going from one team that's like, don't lose 100 games to another one that's like, nah, we're like serious about being World Series contenders. Like we really think we got a shot. And look at this group that we've got right now, a veteran group. They've added the right pieces. Obviously when it comes to pitching and all that stuff too, you'd hope that some of those guys can really stay healthy. You'd hope that Shota has a better year as well. And then obviously with PCA, the media scrum with PCA, I got a lot of thoughts here, was really fascinating to me.
Go for it.
One, the PCA we saw before the All-Star break, right? A superstar. Everything was clicking on all cylinders. And then the PCA after the All-Star break, numbers dropped. it was clear he struggled. And people will talk about how, okay, the emotional side of things, blah, blah, blah. Honestly, listen, I'm okay if these guys show emotions, because here's the thing. At the end of the day, they are humans. And I think it's good if you let people express their emotions. And I'll be honest, at first when we were talking with PCA, I think he knows at this rate, he's going to be someone that we're always going to want to hear from. When they beat the Padres here in Chicago, I was in the clubhouse, got sprayed with champagne in my face with Craig and all that stuff. We needed to go talk to PCA. And I just remember people were swarming him left and right. And he was so kind, still gave everyone his time. And I remember I was kind of by him on the field and he was talking to some of his family members and everything, really getting the chance to soak it in. But he was so busy in the clubhouse, like talking to us and trying to give us his time. Obviously, like, I think he knows going into this year, we're going to want to hear from you. And for a moment, when we were talking to him, overall, great answers, told us, obviously, his swing, what he wanted to work on, his conversation with Alex. Part of me for a moment felt like, is he annoyed at us? It's like, it's spring training. It's your first media session. Like, but the more we talk to him, and I'm kind of a big, like, body language person. I think you can tell a lot. And I realized, like, I think with PCA, and of course he won't ever, like, I don't think he would ever say this. This is just me observing, giving my thoughts here. I think there may be some, almost like some fear of how this year's going to go because of how, I only say this, again, PCA did not say this. I only say this because I think about it from a human element. You have someone where at one point in Chicago, we're asking each other, is he like the biggest superstar right now in this city? And by the way, it's Chicago. You know, there's a lot of pressure that comes with this city. And I remember thinking, is he like, because he came off as a little like annoyed, but then I realized, you know what? I thought about it some more on our drive back to the hotel. I realized for someone as young as him, there's got to be some fear that comes with this, right? When you go from you like the main questions we're going to be asking you is how can we see consistency from you, right? And how can we see the PCA that we saw really in the first half of the season there? And I can only imagine for him, maybe going into this season, there's probably some, not obviously not insecurity, but maybe some fear, like, how is this going to go? Because we don't know, right? And I think when you're a young player, and I think that's why his conversations with Bregman was so fascinating, because he went into detail about, like, you know, they're talking about his approach, his setup, like when you're stepping in the box, the mentality and all that jazz. I think that's why one of the things, the reasons I believe that, I think having Alex Bregman, the three-time All-Star, two-time World Series champ, obviously comes with a ton of postseason experience as well, which is more than beneficial for this team. But I think for someone like PCA, almost to have like someone like that to look up to is going to be really helpful, because throughout the conversation, like, he gave a lot of great answers. But I couldn't help but think, I can only imagine being in his shoes, right? When, you know, the whole city of Chicago, you know, when the highs are high, I'm sure they're really high.
I mean, he was an MVP candidate.
Yeah. But man, when they're low, like, there's definitely got to be some fear here. Fear of the unknown. Like, what is this season going to look like for me? How is this, you know, how is this year going to start off for me? I'm, of course, when you're in that position, there's a ton of pressure and you know what you signed up for. So just thinking again, I thought about that too deeply. But I think you can tell a lot from how people's body language and how they answer things. And it's not, you know, again, I just thought about it more like, I can only imagine the pressure that he feels. But I think to have someone like a Bregman in that clubhouse now, especially for him, because it really does seem like they have formed like a close bond kind of quickly too, with the way like PCA talks about him. Seeing the kind of step forward PCA takes this season, I think will be just kind of fascinating to watch.
One of my best friends in the business is Michael Kim. And Kimmer did a great job of bridging some gaps for me and talking about how in America, the conversation about race is very binary, like white, black, right? And he's saying that as a Korean, it was difficult to figure out kind of where he fit in. And then as a Korean man in sports, there weren't, when he was doing it, there was almost none. Like now that number has jumped up fairly significantly on a national level. As a Vietnamese woman, was there ever any time where you felt self-conscious about being in our industry?
Short answer is yes. But I will say yes, because I think it had already stemmed from like what I shared earlier, my childhood of me growing up in a small town in Texas and realizing, like I loved Barbie growing up, and it's because I thought Barbie was so beautiful. Like Barbie was blonde, Barbie had blue eyes. And so I think that it stems a bit from that too. But I think one of the beautiful things about getting older is experience and wisdom. And you come to, and I think comfortability in your own skin. I think I'd be fully lying if I said, oh no, I don't think anyone notices that I'm Asian or that I'm, but they do. When they come up to me and they ask me, what are you? I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, are you mixed? Are you, I've gotten like anything and everything. And I say, no, I'm full Vietnamese. And for those who know, Dat Nguyen, they asked me, are you related to Dat Nguyen? I'm not related to Dat Nguyen, although I do know Dat Nguyen. He went to A&M. I like him and I do talk from time to time. I remember I met him and I was just like, you're like the only Vietnamese American NFL player. And I was like, my dad told me about you. And like, my dad does not watch sports. Like my father told me about you. It was so cool. And so, I mean, but I don't, I've been so grateful to have known really great people in this industry, to where like, it's not like uncomfortable at all. It's just, I think in the back of your mind, like, you know, you look different and it's not a bad thing at all, but it's different enough to people will come up and people will ask you, hey, like, you know, are you full? Or are you, most of the time I get, are you mixed?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, I'm Vietnamese. Both my parents are from Vietnam. So I will say, I think, again, some of that stems from how I grew up. And I think the pressure of like wanting to fit in and everything. And then you get older and you realize like, this is who God made me to be. And actually like, this is pretty cool that I look like this. And again, with my parents, how they view America and how they view the opportunities that this land has, this country has given them. And I think more importantly, their kids, their four kids that I went to A&M, my sister went to A&M, my brother went to UT. And I think my parents can kind of, in their wildest dream, ever imagine like all their kids going to like really great Texas schools where, you know, when we go around, we tell people we went to this school, they're like, wow, that's so cool. So I don't know, the older you get, you don't realize like you realize how much of an impact like your family has on you and your parents too.
Favorite part about your job and what you've been doing at Fox 32?
Well, my favorite part, I love talking to people. Like, I love going to spring training because I was hopping around with like, I was talking to like Chris Getz, Will Venable, getting to be inside the clubhouse, get a feel. And then you go and you're like talking to some like the equipment guys. Like I love talking to people. And I just think you can learn so much about people and like, and through people too. So that's, I was thinking about this the other day. So I was like, why did I get into this? Like, what it like, cause sometimes you just have moments where you think, okay, like what is like the reasoning for all X, Y, and Z? And I realized like, I've always known this by myself. I love talking to people. It could be, I was actually my Uber driver in Phoenix on the way to the airport. I get in the car and I'm typically one of those, like, I don't want to talk, like make conversations type of person. I lived in the Northeast for a little bit, New York City, New Jersey area. And I adopted that mentality kind of quickly, sometimes on accident. So I got in the car and I'm kind of like, this guy starts talking to me. And I was like, yeah, like I'm here for spring training. And of course, like sometimes when you tell people what you do, then they're like, oh, you think you know your sports? I'm like, well, let me tell you about like the Cubs lineup and the depth that they have in their rotation. And they're like, oh, okay, you know what you're talking about. I'm like, yeah. So we're talking for a little bit, talking about sports. And I asked him, you know, what does he do? And he told me he sold his business a few years ago, made a lot of money, and is now, he has three daughters. His daughters signed him up to be an Uber driver to kind of get him out there. And come to find out, I got this guy, Lawrence, to open up about how by the time he was 15, he had been in 10 foster care homes.
What?
How it's built like a, it's really helped him form this kind of tenacity and resiliency in life when it comes to becoming a successful businessman. He has three daughters. He is a widower. His wife, he lost his wife a few years ago. She passed while she was sleeping. And I asked him, I said, what have you learned in the grieving process? And he was like, honestly, I've never grieved it, because when she passed, I had daughters to take care of. I had a business to take care of, all this stuff. I just like pulled out all this like tidbit from him. But it was just like such a fascinating conversation about life, about work, about grief. And like, those are some moments in my life when I realized, like, and then when I'm talking with, like, you know, when you can get a correct counsel to tell you, like, why is this team like so hard to play on? Why is it so like the importance of having a well-rounded baseball team when it comes to adding Alex Bregman? He's a right-handed hitter now. When you've got PCA Bush and Ballesteros, right, all left-handed hitters, like what that can do to your lineup, the flexibility it can give you and all that fun stuff, to just talking about life. Like, I think that's one of the reasons why I got into this, is I just love learning and love talking to people. And I mean, right now at Fox 32, we're doing a ton of, like, we call them CST podcasts. We have people on talking about the Bulls, the Bears, the Blackhawks. Today we got Connor Bedard. It's just a constant, like, I mean, I get to talk to people every day and I get to pick their brains about why they are the best at what they do. Like Connor Bedard. Okay, you got hurt in a face-off play the final second in December 12th in St. Louis. Okay, well, now here you are. Before you got hurt, one of the top scorers in the NHL, literally factoring in for like nearly half their goals. Like, how do you get back to that way? What's your confidence level too? Like, we get to talk to people who are so dang good at what they do. And it's so, and I, one of my favorite things too is like picking coaches' brains, like NBA coaches' brains. Like, I mean, coaches are just different creatures in general, but I think the level of sacrifice that they have to make for their jobs, and everyone at this level, even us, I think that's so respectful. And obviously, I think it's something that we all kind of bond with too, because we know this is not easy to do. You do have to sacrifice. And when you just get to talk to people and learn about them and learn about why they're so good at X, Y, and Z, or why, hey, what were you really thinking on this play? I don't know. Those things get me so fired up. So it could be about life or it could just be about sports. I just kind of love it all.
The stuff that you're doing on social media is awesome. I think you are like an incredible asset to Fox 32. And every time I see you, I'm like, man, like she's getting it. Like I enjoy that you have the passion that you've shown already on this podcast, I think comes across in the stuff that you do on social and the stuff that you do on air. And I'm happy. I'm happy that you continue to progress and challenge and try stuff. And I love that. Like it's inspiring, honestly, like for an old head like me, hearing you and seeing you do cool stuff. I'm like, oh, all right. Young people out here trying to take people's jobs. All right. I got to make sure that I'm buttoned up and ready to go. And I'm trying new stuff, but I'm so glad that you had time. I'm sorry I kept you longer than I expected.
I'm sorry I blabbed. I didn't know I could blab this long. Oops.
No, it's all good. Like this funny thing is like, I like this because this is what our actual conversations are like.
Right.
So it plays out perfectly for the podcast, but I'm really happy that you're doing what you're doing and you keep kind of raising the standard for yourself. And that's a good, good thing. So thanks for being on the podcast. Continued success to you. And I will see you soon, okay?
Yes, sounds good.
All right, that is Tina Nguyen. She is awesome. You should check her out on Fox 32. I pop up occasionally on her show. Speegs is over there a lot. But honestly, you should just be watching for type of stuff that Tina's doing, the stuff that Cassie's doing over there at Fox 32. They've even without Lou, like they've got a really strong team. So support them, and I hope that you learn something about Tina and about the Cubs and the White Sox tonight. That's good stuff. I will talk to you next time. Peace.
With all the GLP-1 companies out there, how does someone know which one's actually reliable?
I tell people to look at four things. Is it safe? Does it work? Is it affordable? And will you actually get clinical support? When you use that filter, one brand keeps standing out, Bleve. They use U.S. pharmacies. People see results close to the research, about 18% weight loss. It's around $4 a day, and they include nurse support at no extra cost. And full disclosure, I actually use them. I signed up during my lunch break and got approved before I even left work.
Okay, I just Googled it while you were talking, and yeah, it really does look simple. For anyone listening who wants to check it out, where should they go?
It's joinbleve.com, spelled B-L-I-V.
So if you've been curious about GLP-1s, joinbleve.com might be a good place to start.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that, cools up to 8 times faster, and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus an extra $100 off all mattresses. End Saturday, only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.